Hello, Brodies and Brodettes of the world. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you are listening to Season 5, Episode 7 of Brody Sports Talk. I am joined by Mr. Maverick himself, and that is Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
Hello, and how is everyone doing today? Thank you for putting us in your ear holes as we are bringing you some Brody Bites.
Absolutely. Welcome to August. It's the month before the month that football season begins. And so what better way than to just get going with a little bit of the football news this wonderful Wednesday. Derek, tomorrow on Thursday, August the 3rd, it is going to be the Hall of Fame game between the Browns and the Jets. Part of that is, of course, Joe Thomas and Darrell Revis are two players going into the Hall of Fame. So they like having some of the fan bases come out there. Plus, for Akron, having Cleveland come, it's basically like a foot away. Who are you excited to see in this game, knowing it is probably going to be a lot of backups or rookies, maybe some undrafted free agents showing up out there?
Yeah, for me, I want to see what the former UCLA quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, can do for the Browns. So I think that he showed a lot in his college days that really made you think he's got some potential. And I think that the Browns are going to be in need of a really good backup quarterback. We'll talk about that later on in the week on exactly what I mean by that. But I think if he goes out there, has, you know, maybe a quarter or a half of football, see what he's got, see what, you know, throwing to the backups. You know, just marching down the field, running an offense. I just want to see him and what he can do with players that, you know, probably he played with better guys at UCLA. What about you? Who do you want to see?
So I am intrigued, of course. I've got to see some of these Jets getting things together. Would love to see what happens. Going to see former Packer Tim Boyle take the field probably and get some good snaps out there. I'd love to see him show up and get a good fight out there for the third string quarterback spot. You know, the honorary come in and maybe take a knee occasionally guy. I'd love to see Will McDonald the fourth for the Jets come in and play. I know that he's their first round pick, but I don't know that we'll see him a ton. I know a couple of years ago when the Jaguars were there, we were able to see Trayvon Walker pop a little bit in that game. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's against some backup offensive linemen, but you could see the skill as to why athletically he was going high in the draft. I want to see that for Will McDonald the fourth. If I'm going to, I've got to bring it up as well. There's a young running back that I'm intrigued by. The Jets took him in round 5. Israel, or they also say he goes by Izzy Abanaconda, is going out there. He's listed as the backup kick returner to Mecole Hardman and also the third string running back. Potentially, it's probably him and Zonovan Knight down there behind Hall and Carter. Obviously, Hall's still recovering. We're not going to see him. I just want to see, hey, this is the new guy. This is the new kid on the block. What does he have? Is he elusive? Is he got good hands? What are they going to have him show? Because they don't normally show a bunch, but usually you can at least see someone run the ball. So I'm hoping to see Izzy show up and get some good carries.
That's great. I'm going to be looking forward to that as well. As, you know, sometimes you can get a little bit lost in the, I don't know who these guys are, but it's always nice to kind of keep your eye out for somebody.
And just for the record, in case you are not familiar with those players, Dorian Thompson-Robinson for the Browns is going to be wearing number 17. And then if you're looking at the Jets, Izzy, who I hyped up there, is going to be wearing number 25. So I figure, kind of like you said, Derek, if you don't know them, we probably should give some jersey numbers out so that people are able to spot them a little bit faster. Plus, I don't think anyone else is going to be able to say Abanaconda very well.
Exactly.
Well, unfortunately, Derek, with training camp, there are some training camp injuries that occur. And some of them happened to teams that happen to wear blue and orange. One of the blues is a darker blue, and that is Tim Patrick for your beloved Denver Broncos, who tore his Achilles. That is something that we never want to see. We always want to see the best players going out and being able to play. I feel like people were hyping up Tim Patrick a lot this year, too. And it's just a tough way for Sean Payton and their season to get going down one of their main receivers. And on the other side of the ball, the defensive side, staying in the AFC, we have Jalen Ramsey, the big acquisition, and one of the top Brodies. I believe he was in the top 20 this year. He went out. He had left meniscus surgery. And he is not expected to play for several months. People have said maybe December, maybe the season he's out. It's not going to be great. So, Derek, tell me a little bit about these guys and about the injuries and how much you're going to miss them this year.
Yeah, so Tim Patrick is the heart and soul of the receiving core for the Broncos. He's a guy that can go out there, make a play when you really need him. And it's really not fair after missing, I think, all of last season, or at least most of last season, goes out in the first couple of days, tears his Achilles, going to be out for the year again. It's just not fair. So with Courtland Sutton, with Jerry Jeudy, you have your two guys out there, and Russell Wilson is going to find those guys. But the third receiver is really important in these offenses because they're the guys who are not going to be double teamed, and those are the guys that usually pick up those hard yards. And if you're running routes really well, you're going to get open and you're going to get your yards, you're going to get your catches. And so Tim Patrick was supposed to have a really breakout year. He's going to be missed in the on the field. And I know that he's going to be rooting for his guys from the sideline. On the other side of the ball, with Jalen Ramsey, I really do feel sorry for him in that he had a brand new shot, just was going to go out. You know, every year is a new year in the NFL. He's kind of like a microcosm of your life. Just, these 18 plus weeks that you're out there playing. And he is one of the better coverage guys that's out there. But there's been a little bit of talk about him, busted coverages and maybe losing a step, stuff like that, and not being able to go out there at the beginning of the season and probably not going to have a very active season. Even if he comes in December, he's not going to have a whole lot of time to get acclimated, to get up into, NFL timing and get into that shape where he needs to be. So it's really, really tough for his team and for him. I mean, he just wanted to go out there and prove everybody wrong. And, I feel sorry for these guys that get hurt in training camp and even in the first couple of days of training camp. Like, you just go out there and something happens, and it's just not fair.
It is not fair at all. Let's go ahead and switch gears, though. We've talked about this kind of story a few weeks in a row, it feels like, Derek. We talked about the running backs being underpaid. They got on that Zoom call. Then we talked about Saquon signing his deal. And now we have Jonathan Taylor on the last year of his rookie contract, holding out, trying to get paid by the Colts owner, of course, Jim Irsay. There was a big hubbub the other day about him meeting up with Jim Irsay in the RV. Irsay's RV was right there next to training camp. And there was just some really strange conversation that happened right there with Irsay, it seems like. And then some of the fallout that's happened shortly thereafter. I will say that in light of all of that, yesterday, Zach Moss broke his forearm and is going to have surgery. So Zach Moss presumably would have been the RB2 behind Taylor. Taylor appears to be holding out. Zach Moss is injured. That running back room is getting empty. But Derek, I just kind of want to know your thoughts about Taylor, Irsay, and the Colts at this early August point in this timeline.
Like, I get it that, hey, I'm the owner. I don't want to pay my guy. You know, we've all seen that you can, you know, pick some, just anyone off the running back heap and, you know, go do it. On the other hand, Jonathan Taylor is your offense. You have a rookie coming in to start as quarterback. Now, very promising rookie. Top four pick, had a, you know, looks like he's got a really high upside. Anthony Richardson is probably going to be a great quarterback in the Jalen Hurts style of offense. But this year you have to have Jonathan Taylor, and I don't know what you're doing. Like, the writing's on the wall for running backs. Like, you're not going to spend money on them. You're not going to, you know, treat them well. I mean, we saw what happened to Saquon, and he's in a very similar situation where the offense runs through that running back. And we saw that, you know, Saquon basically took the franchise tag, but it just was just called a one-year contract. And he's coming up for renewal next year. Well, if it's bad this year, it's just going to be worse next year for running backs. And so he wants a contract. And from, you know, from things that are on X, like, oh, hey, he, you know, he came in with a back injury. And so we're going to put him, you know, we could put him on this list and not pay him for the year. And then he posts out, he posts out that he didn't come in with a back injury, so y'all are lying and stuff like that. Frankly, you know, we got Dan Snyder out of the league, and he was the worst owner. And of course, you know, there's 31 guys out there. I could never put my dear favorite Caleb as a bad owner, but there's 31 other guys out there that. Someone has to be the worst. And I think that Jim Irsay said, hold my beer. And I'm going to be the most outspoken and the guy who treats my my team the worst or trying to find the exact thing to make the fans dislike me. Hey, when's the last time you won a playoff game, Indianapolis? Let's not even to mention a Super Bowl. So maybe... play nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're making a lot of sense here. And I find it to be very interesting and somewhat puzzling because Jim Irsay is getting up there a little bit in years. He is in his 60s. I do think that he may be the most out of touch owner now that Dane Snyder is not there, kind of like you said. But it's just very, very odd. I do want to bring up the fact that one of the things that he reportedly said was that the Indianapolis Colts are one of the best organizations at treating their players well. Derek, you happen to be a fan of one of the former Colts players that won a Super Bowl with your team after he left there. and by the name of Peyton Manning.
Oh, really?
What do you kind of think of Irsay's claim here that when you have the Colts, it's one of the best organizations in football?
I chuckle and I chortle and I guffaw at that. So I don't want to bring up a sore subject, but I'm going to use it as a reference point. The Colts are the Packers of the AFC. So they have a generational quarterback, the one of the greatest guys to play football during that time. And they just choose to go another way with their draft picks. They choose to do things that are not smart, and they don't reinforce their best player, stuff like that. Now, I think Peyton Manning had a better chance at Indianapolis than Aaron Rodgers did. But Peyton Manning, who is at least a top three, let's say top three best quarterbacks in the NFL history, and he only had one and only went to two Super Bowls, that means something. And frankly, like you won the AFC South a bunch of times, and the AFC Championship game and stuff like that, you got there and you just couldn't do it. So for me, that's fun, that's fine, that's dandy, but you saw what the Denver Broncos did in 4 years. Peyton Manning only played for the Broncos for 4 years. He went to two Super Bowls and won one of them. They flipped the entirety of their team from the greatest offense of all time at that point. They had the most yards and the most, you know, efficiency, to his last Super Bowl when they were the best defense of all time, like one of the best in the modern era, with sacks and, you know, Von Miller, of course, was a big part of that. So I don't understand what you're doing when you had Peyton Manning there and you didn't do, you didn't build a better roster than you did. So for me, I think Jim Irsay needs to quiet himself.
I think that you're right. I also think that some of this just becomes extra, extra puzzling. Like, why did Andrew Luck get rushed back from injury so many times after Peyton Manning was gone? You know, was there not more support in the organization for Luck to be able to retire in the offseason versus the awkward preseason retirement that ended up happening for him? When you fire a coach in Frank Reich and then you hire someone who literally has only high school coaching experience in Jeff Saturday, you look very disorganized, like you don't trust your organization, like only you can make the right decisions. And all of that just isn't the way that you want to be going. I want to say that I think Jim Irsay could be a good owner. I think that there is a chance that you look at him and you say, well, those teams have won. I think that he had some great coaches. Tony Dungy, he had even Jim Caldwell, Chuck Pagano, who did well there for several years. And Frank Reich, like, he's had good coaches. They've had good GMs. They've had good quarterbacks most of the time. I don't know that I think he's actually a good owner. I think he has been a fortunate owner. And I think that we can't sit here and say the Colts are the class organization. Well, it wasn't Jim, it was his dad who ended up moving the Colts out of Baltimore. So I can't blame him for that. But it was, I believe, 2 years after his dad had bought the Colts. that he moved them from Baltimore to Indianapolis. It might be shrewd business, but I don't think we can sit here and say, oh, we take great care of everyone. That might be a bit much.
Caleb, okay, so I need to, you brought up the B word, and I cannot let this pass. So there are 31 businesses in the NFL and who have, you know, a primary owner, basically the, you know, a guy as a face of it, or, you know, a person as a face of it. There are not 31 Apples out there. There are not 31 Amazons out there. The NFL is a money printing business. Frankly, you need to put a pretty decent product out there in order to make money. If even the teams that are really bad and who have been bad for a while still are profitable, because there's always hope. You know what most owners do? They just get out of the way. They don't make the news. Jim Irsay wants to be the news, and he just needs to get out of his own way. Let Chris Ballard do what Chris Ballard does, puts together a good team, retools. Just Jim Irsay, just stop talking and get out of the way.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair.
I don't want to belabor the point. What I need to do.
No, it's okay. I feel like in general, it was points that need to be said. I guess we can sit here and say we are definitely Team Taylor. If there was any question about that. But let's go ahead. Let's switch from the pros to the collegiate level, because once again, there has been some more shakeups, as in the 2024 season, the Colorado Buffaloes are going to be leaving the Pac-10/12. That is the Pac-10 right now, I think. And they are going to the Big 12, which will have 13 teams. Don't let what numbers are in college conferences determine how well you do math, kids. Colorado going to the Big 12. It's a big move. They never really felt like they were a great fit in the Pac-12. In the, I want to say they left in 2009 or 2010. It was right around the same time that Nebraska was leaving the Big 12 for the Big 10. It's a little strange to see someone like come back, but you do get Coach Prime right now, and he's probably excited because he wants to recruit into the state of Texas. What do you think of this, Derek? First and foremost for Colorado, and then secondly for the Big 12.
Yeah, so for Colorado, they have to become relevant again, and the way that the Pac-12 is going right now, the Pac-12 looks like their rights are going to go to Apple. And so, I mean, on the Apple TV thing, you have to be on cable television or broadcast television. You have to be on ABC. You have to be on ESPN. You have to be on those broadcast channels where the cable isn't, and like YouTube TV, whatever, you know, the cable channels. You can't be on a streaming service, even though Thursday Night Football has done decent for Prime. You're not going to have an entire schedule. You're not going to have an entire football conference on Apple Plus. And be able to be viable. It's just, the numbers aren't great. It's like you need 32 million subscribers to break even. There's just not great. So, and that's all West Coast stuff anyways. Colorado is more regionally bound to, you know, the Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico area right there. And yeah, of course, you want to get Coach Prime into Texas. You want to get Coach Prime into, you know, the Arch Manning type of conversation where the number one player goes to your school. This sets up the Big 12 as the Big 13 for the time being, with four new teams entering this year, two teams leaving next year. But it kind of has a parody vibe to it, where you have who's going to be the best team in the Big 12, because you're not going to have the Oklahoma and Texas types being in there where they're going to dominate for the most part. Then you're going to have those TCU upstarts and those Oklahoma State upstarts. And so this kind of says, hey, the Big 12 could be a Big 16 soon. And this is the, you know, let's get on the ground floor of that. So that's where I see Colorado coming into the Big 12 or coming back to the Big 12 and where they're at right now.
I think it all makes sense. Like, it's all about money. And if you're sitting there still with no TV deal in the Pac-12, something has got to give. And they said, we'll take the sure money. You know, Pac-12, you were there for us when we needed money 10 years ago. We're going to refinance. We're going to the Big 12. Like, give us the spot where we know where we can last. And it's not like they had a rich history in the Pac-12. Like, of all the teams that were out there, I feel like this is one of the easiest to see the switch. Renewed rivalries with Kansas State, Iowa State. It's great. Having Boulder back in the Big 12, it's a beautiful town. So I'm really excited that that has happened. Derek, you did mention that this is going to put the Big 12 to 13 teams in 2024. I personally find it odd or unlikely that the Big 12 is accepting Colorado, knowing that conference football season could be six games and a bye. It just is not a great fit for what you want for your TV partners. You'd love to have that seventh game, or you're doing six and a bye and two teams get the week off. What do you kind of think is the next step for the Big 12 in this realm?
Oh, there is such an easy pathway for the Big 12 now. You go get New Mexico, you go get Arizona, you go get Arizona State, and you go get Utah. That's three teams you're adding to a Pac-13, move to a Big 13. You make a Big 16, and you have Utah being the new kind of power of the of your conference. They won the Pac-12 last year over USC. USC, UCLA is going to the Big Ten soon. So you go pick up some of those Pac-12 schools, and then, you know, I don't think you can go to 18, because I think that's just a little bit a bridge too far. But you know, Washington, Oregon is up there. You know, you might be able to get a package deal for them, and you know, see what you can do. Those teams would also come in and be, you know, probably contenders in the league, and then it just shows you. Then you're kind of going ahead and consolidating the conferences into, you know, Big Ten, Big 12. SEC, ACC, and there you go. Now you have your four conferences where you can put three teams apiece probably in it.
So there are two teams that really catch my eye in a strange way when it comes to the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the team that everyone has kind of been hyping for a little bit of time, and that's Arizona. I think the Arizona Wildcats make sense. They have a great basketball program. The Big 12 basketball is one of the best things that conference has going for it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still going to stay even with OU and Texas leaving. Like, OU and Texas have not been major factors in Big 12 basketball since the days of Blake Griffin and Kevin Durant in college basketball. I think technically OU did a Final Four after that. But you know what I'm saying. Most of the fact, they're not the big teams in the conference. Arizona would be a big basketball brand It would get you another team a little further west if you want to stake that claim and raid the Pac-12 even more. The other one that gets you elite basketball is on the other coast, and that is the UConn Huskies. I think that it would be really interesting to see that, because then you potentially are trying to get in the UConn area. So you're getting New York, Boston a little bit, maybe. I know that in general, they primarily care for their pro sports teams, but if you can say, hey, do you see this part of the Northeast? That's a big TV market. And UConn is a lot closer than, say, West Virginia, Cincinnati, to those areas. So I think with UConn kind of being the one that was left from the Big East when most of those teams went to the ACC, I think UConn is looking for a great place for them to go. And I think you have UConn men's basketball and UConn's women's basketball. UConn women playing against like Baylor and women's basketball a couple times a year. Yes. UConn men versus the Kansas Jayhawks doing a home and home. Yes. I think that either one of those two teams would be thrilling. I know that football is the primary thing, but let's be real. You also want to be able to make money across the board. And I think getting Arizona, going further west, getting the Phoenix market, going further east, potentially, and getting the New York, Boston area with UConn, you're not going wrong with either of those selections.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. I wouldn't go UConn because you have a footprint going to West Virginia, and then going from BYU to UConn is a tough sledding. But I would certainly say it would be great to have a power women's basketball team. Baylor is really great and has been good. I know Paige Butkers is leaving soon. I'm sure she's going to the WNBA. But, see what we can do to get her into the Big 12 for just a year.
Ain't nothing wrong with it. That's for sure. Last but not least, of course, Derek, there is a Women's World Cup going on. Based off of our recording time, the Wednesday morning matches, at least Wednesday morning as they would be here in the U.S., have not happened to wrap up Groups F and Group G. That is okay. Those matches will happen and we'll get to check them out. But let's get to the team that we want to talk about the most, because we're biased. The U.S. Women's National Team. Since we talked last week, Derek, they had a 1-1 draw against the Netherlands, which they were down 1-0 and looked like they had to scrap just to even get that draw. Then they went out against Portugal and had a draw this morning. It was a rough one because the Portugal almost got a goal in stoppage time where it hit off the post. So we're talking about a U.S. team that has scored 4 goals in 3 matches. They came in as the world number one, the potential favorite. And this is the first time, I believe they said ever, that the U.S. has not won at least 2 games in their group for the U.S. Women's National Team at a Women's World Cup. And I just am curious, like, are you concerned? Do you think that they are going to be able to flip a switch, or do you think that this is abort? You got to find someone else that you think is your favorite.
Ooh, so if it wasn't for the most recent game, I would say, hey, calm down, everyone. Just take a moment. But frankly, they were just that close from being sent home. This is the first time since I don't remember the 90s since they haven't won their group. They're lucky that they're going to knockout play. I don't say they want to flip a switch, but I think that I still believe in him. Big, I'm never going to count him out. But I've got to see a better play on their next game, like a 3-goal win, basically.
And that's in the knockout stage. I mean,
correct.
A knockout stage that is not likely to be friendly. Most, if you look at the brackets, the most likely outcome, which we may have already know by the time this is airing, is that the U.S. should be playing against Sweden. Sweden has had our number before. They beat us in the 2020 Olympics. They are a team that can bring it. I don't want to take that chance. I don't think you would want them to take that chance. I think even if they can squeak past Sweden in penalty kicks, you are relieved that you are there. It is at this point survive in advance and anything can happen. I just think definitely early in the tournament, there was at least some discussion of the U.S. versus the field. I don't even know if I think I'd take the U.S. head-to-head against some of the best other teams in the world right now, which is saying a lot. I do think that there's a decent chance if the U.S. goes out in the round of 16 or in the quarterfinals that they will be looking for a new manager before the 2024 Olympics.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's that hot of a take.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Well, that is all that we have here for this Brody Bites episode. Make sure that you give us all of your best comments on X. You can find us there at Brody Talk. It used to be known as Twitter. But we love being able to talk and communicate with you all on the X app. Okay, Twitter. I don't even know that I can take myself seriously saying that. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. As I said, we're in August. We're counting down towards the season. Our episode on Friday is going to be legit. I know because it's going to get us through half the NFL teams. We're going to have previewed half the NFL teams by the time we're done with it, which is an epic point. You don't want to miss a single episode. You want to hear us talk about each and every NFL team before the season starts. And then, you know, we'll talk about them during the season as well with epic things like power rankings, because we always have to have power rankings. Isn't that right, Derek?
I love power rankings and we are the best at it. So power rankings are the best.
Absolutely. So on behalf of my fantastic co-host Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. Thank you for listening to Brody Sports Talk and y'all have a great one. Bye.
Bye guys.